Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. And I believe we just had Leah join us. Leah, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm awesome. Happy Monday to you as well. I hope your week is off to a great start.
Thank you. It is.
Fantastic. So I wanted to tell our listeners a little bit about you and about what we're going to be talking about today. I think it's such a great subject because no matter who you are, or what sort of career you might be entering into, we all have past traumatic events and different emotions that hold us back personally and professionally. So let me tell our listeners a little bit about you. There are not only stories in books, but also compelling information in our energy system and overall wellness that's necessary for everybody in a self-care journey to understand. And Leah believes that disconnection is the root of all fear, and the attempt at letting go causes more problems than it solves. Debunking the myth of detachment and the other popular New Age ideologies, Leah emphasizes that there is no escapism in emotional healing. Rather, the process is about putting the personal pieces of your heart, mind, and soul back together again. In Leah's book, The Fearless Path, she offers a radical approach that will heal trauma, fear, heartache, and mental and physical health. I don't know about any of our listeners, but I know I could definitely use a dose of that every now and again. Your book highlights the impact that fear, guilt, shame, and grief has on humans and how to process and heal that pain. We seek happiness and peace, and it is only through connection and acceptance that we can reach that goal. So emotional healing requires putting your broken pieces back together again, and to mend your heart, you must have access first to the suffering. And to do this, you must be willing to tear down the walls that create the confines of your emotional prison. So Leah, tell our listeners a little bit about this, about how you came to create The Fearless Path. I think it's such an inspirational and interesting topic that so often we do try and escape it, and we just push it under the rug because we don't want to confront the things that are traumatic or that upset us in our lives. How did you go down this path that is not a fun path to go down, it sounds like?
Well, it is. It's difficult, but it's real. And I think a lot of us, me included, come to a place where there's not a lot of other choices. Life isn't working anymore. We feel stuck. We've tried everything, the therapy, the exercise programs, the meditations, the, you know, drugs, whatever we can use, and it just doesn't work, you know, and we're not happy. And for me, I've always kind of been a very purpose-driven person, you know, very kind of mission-oriented achiever, I guess, if you will. And I got to a point after a series of traumas that I'd experienced, including rape and an eating disorder and an aunt that was murdered and my parents' divorce and various things that left me in a state of, you know, just unable to function hardly at all, much less to in a way that I felt happy and comfortable. So I was led to energy healing and meditation and body work through a friend who knew I was struggling. And in the quest of seeking my own healing, I became a healer, which I think often happens. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made. I really had an awakening of sorts. I hate to use that word because it sounds better than something else, but it really was a transformation when I got on the healing path. And then over the last 20 years, I've developed a program or plan that helps other people get on that same kind of path. And it includes, you know, a holistic approach, which we all know that word holistic, but really understanding how to utilize our physical bodies, our mind, our emotional bodies, and our spiritual calling and connection in that spirit way to go after and do what we want to do in life. So it is a path. It's not impossible. And sometimes it's not even hard, but it's hard to get started, I think. You know, it's hard for people to get committed to it because they're afraid. And that's why I named it The Fearless Path, because truly, being fearless is just having the courage to show up to ourselves. You know, we don't have to climb huge mountains. We don't have to put ourselves at risk. We don't have to do anything besides being willing to show up. And that is huge, and that takes courage. And once you do it, then you're on the path.
Yeah, it's something that I think resonates with so many people, because we've all, in some way or another, faced obstacles, upsets, whether they were, you know, severe, like, my God, I can't even imagine having an aunt be murdered, or, you know, I personally went through an eating disorder, so I know what that's like. But there's all sorts of different traumas, you know, that can impact our success or efficacy in life. Just the other day, I was talking to a client of mine who had this attorney, and she said that, Jen, I've never seen somebody be so awful to other people. And he was just verbally abusive and spouting out the most awful things. Well, turns out one day somebody sat down with him and talked to him about his trauma. And he was brought up in a verbally abusive family where people just berated him. And I think the sad thing is, if we never take the time to reflect on what you're talking about, then we tend to propagate and perpetuate the problem by repeating the same patterns that we were raised in, instead of looking at, is there a different path? Is there a fearless path, or a path that we could go down that maybe we haven't explored before?
That's exactly right. And actually, you know, I'm glad you mentioned, the things I named that I went through, those were the big ones, you know, but we all go through everyday pain, sufferings, grief, shame, embarrassment, guilt, grief, all kinds of things. And it's what I've coined in the book, the post-traumatic emotional disorder, which we can talk about more at length. But just to say that it, you know, it doesn't have to be a big trauma that affects us, that we carry forward this idea or low self-worth or difficulty in achieving our dreams or living the life that we want. It's really the smaller everyday things that nag at us. But in the book, I mentioned that there's usually one event, even if it's just, you know, something someone said. It doesn't have to be a huge trauma, but it can be something someone said or a response you got from work or something. There's usually one thing that kind of, you know, it's kind of that tipping point where all of our past, those everyday past grievances and heartaches and sufferings kind of compound. And then there's one event or one thing where we go, okay, I need to turn a corner here. Mm-hmm. You know, it impacts your life, and it wakes you up, and it asks you, how are we going to move forward? How am I going to live and have integrity and be able to feel myself and do what I want to do? And it's that moment that is, you know, helps us to make change in our life. And it can feel scary, that moment, because we know inside that it's time to do something different. And that different may just be, it's time to grow up, you know, it's time to be responsible. It's time to, you know, put aside some of the things that people I've been blaming or some of these excuses. But when we get there, we have to make the choice. And so I really wrote the book to help people just understand what it is that they're suffering with, because we all have this idea that, oh, I have anxiety disorder, or I have an eating problem, or I have a weight issue, or a gambling addiction, or addiction in general. And, you know, we've labeled these big ideas as issues in our life, but those are really just symptoms. You know, the hostile lawyer that you just mentioned, that's a symptom. And we have to get down underneath the symptom and figure out what's causing the problem. And at that place is where we can start healing and actually create change.
You brought up, I mean, I don't even know where to go. You brought up so many wonderful points in what you just said. I can't decide. Do we go to post-traumatic emotional disorder? Do we, you know, delve a little bit further into how you got here? Is it something, I know for some of our listeners out there, they might be thinking, I know even for myself, I'm thinking, well, gosh, that sounds like a great idea. And it sounds completely insurmountable, like climbing Mount Kilimanjaro in the summertime. You know, I just can't even fathom overcoming, you know, the eating disorder, the gambling, or even my boss who one time said I was worthless, or your parents who said you were worthless. And now you spend the rest of your life looking for people to prove that you're worthless, or trying to do the opposite and prove that you're worthy. And so how does one step onto that path? Does it start with identifying the post-traumatic emotional disorder, or is it a different step that people could take to start with?
Well, it certainly can start with the identification, But, you know, when I work with clients one-on-one, I usually start with the physical part of their being, because we all understand physicality. You know, we all know our bodies. We all know what it feels like to be upset or to grieve or feel discomfort of any sort. So I think that in order to start a new path in your life, you have to get really grounded and present and willing to accept the reality as it is right now. So acceptance would be, I guess, the first thing I would say. But in that acceptance, let's pay attention to who we are and where we are right now. There's a great deal of science and studies and everything that talks about, even just like with food, for example, or a food addiction, or just environmental toxins and so forth. What we take in to our body affects us emotionally and mentally and psychically and spiritually and all things. So we have to start kind of at the base level, you know, and it's, that is the first step forward. If you are addicted to sugar, for example, a lot of people think that's not a big deal. Or if you're having a gluten intolerance, or if, you know, your stomach cramps every time that you eat eggs or whatever it is, when there's an imbalance physically, it throws you off. You don't feel good. You don't feel like getting up. You may not be going to the restroom regularly. You're having cravings, your mood's swinging. There's all kinds of reactions that your physical body will make to what you take in to your body. So we want to get balanced physically, and then we can work on get balanced emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. But physical is very important. There's a lot of people seeking, you know, higher realms in the spiritual world, and I applaud them, and that's wonderful. And there's a real beauty to that, and transcending, and all of that that goes with it. However, we are people with bodies, and we're here
having a human existence.
Yes, and if we, like I said, if we're not, you know, in shape physically, emotionally, and mentally, we're not going to be in shape to do our higher stuff, our higher calling, our purpose, our dreams, our goals. We won't feel like it. We won't be presenting. We won't be able to show up to that. And so it's really important to get to, I think in the book I even said, get real. You know, it's like, let's just get where we are right now and get real, kind of take an inventory so that we feel that we have a solid place to step from. And once we have a solid place to step from, meaning I trust myself, I feel balanced right now. I may not be at my prime, and that's okay, but balanced and steady and grounded. And we got to get there first. The worst thing that we could do is try to jump into a change in our life and fly into, you know, 1976 when we were 6 years old or something, and try to go through everything that happened without having our feet firmly planted on the ground. That's going to be a disaster. It's going to be painful, and we're not going to be able to do anything in that place. So I think the first step is really getting grounded, being present, being balanced, and then starting to open the door to acceptance of, okay, this is what's really going on. This is how I feel, and I don't need to be ashamed of it. I don't need to hide it. I don't need to run from it or ignore it. I just need to sit with it and allow it to be present. So that's step number one.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I look back at my history and the poor choices I made professionally as well as otherwise, you know, when I was into drugs and alcohol in my late teens and I was bulimic and I didn't really care about my health, there wasn't a single conscious healthy choice I could make because I just didn't like myself, not even love myself. I didn't like myself. And I think that so often I feel grateful that I went through that horrible period of my life from when I was about 16 to maybe 23 or 24, because that's what led me to the path of eventually overcoming bulimia and overcoming some of the emotional obstacles that I was faced with. But I couldn't have had the space. I think it comes down to having a space available. And if we're filling that space up with sugars, alcohol, you know, complaining, gossiping, I mean, all these things that are negative or that can draw us down, if our space is completely already filled with those things that we don't want in our lives, there's no space to create something new.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And they're all really just distractions. You know, we create constant distractions to keep us from ourselves. We're afraid. We're afraid of our feelings. We're afraid of who we are, good and bad, you know? And that's the part about the acceptance, is really being with yourself and allowing yourself to be who you are, being authentic, freeing your voice, freeing your expression. These are all really important things to create, you know, the framework where you have boundaries, but also freedom to dive in and heal and experience and transform and experience something different, which is the reality, you know. And it's such a shame that, and we all have been there, and some of us are still really deep into this denial of reality, you know. And some things seem too painful to remember, but even, you know, with PTSD and different things, studies have shown the more we try to forget, the more it's causing negative impact on our minds and our emotions and our body. So it really, we have to look at this different approach, which is inclusive and acceptance and being willing to own what is.
So a thought just occurred to me while you were saying that is that, you know, you and I obviously have done some work on ourselves, and the whole purpose of your book is do work on yourself to thrive and to be your highest and best self and to accept yourself. And I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment, because I would love to get your opinion on this. What about the people out there who have a facade, or at least it appears that they're wildly successful, and yet they don't seem to be grounded or have done the work, whether it's eating healthy or accepting themselves? It's like this dichotomy of, you see people who are successful on the one side, you know, professionally, personally, etc., but then they have kind of this dark shadow side where they still have it and they're able to maintain success. How would you say, would that be possible, or why is that possible?
Well, I mean, there's a whole difference between success of the world and judgment of the world, and success of self and judgment of self, you know. And so when we start comparing and looking at the haves and have nots and how they've achieved and so forth, you know, there's a lot of things that can be done with our minds. You know, the mind is a brilliant machine, and a lot can be achieved. And there's a lot of toe-stepping that can happen, and abuse, and, you know, a lot of negative things that happen, as we know, out in the business world and in personal relationships too. But just talking about, you know, business and career and goals and achieving success, what does that mean to a person, you know? And no one knows what goes on behind closed doors in the business meetings or in the bedroom. So, you know, if we're going to judge anything, it should just be our experience from today versus yesterday. You know, how am I doing today versus yesterday? We get into a really tricky competition here with others, you know, and there's really no competition whatsoever, but it's really the measure of self-success, you know, and how one feels. I know there's a great deal of importance placed on our role, and me too. You know, I want to do the most that I can while I'm here. We all want to be able to function and pay our bills and have more than we need and, you know, succeed. We all want that. But there's a payoff when you can do it in a healthy way, in a being really connected and present and not feeling regrets and not feeling like you're hiding and miserable. And I think this comes to light oftentimes when we see a lot of successful people that are taken down by drugs and by suicide and by, you know, alcohol. And we see the famous people, but we don't see the non-famous people. And it's happening more than we realize, you know. So there is a payoff. And I'm not saying all successful people will hurt themselves, but, you know, the imbalance exists. It just may not exist in their performance of their job.
Yeah, I think that there's always a cost whether we see it or not. And I think that the people who have perhaps lasting success, sustainable success, in my experience, that the people I've come across have a foundation of self-acceptance and knowing what matters, I think, to them, knowing what they can count on themselves for and knowing what others can count on them for. And it's a lot of just being accountable and responsible, whether it's for your own health and well-being. Like you said, start with the body. You know, we live in it. It's whether or not you want to admit it, no matter how spiritual you are, you're living a human existence and you have a human body that is going to help you or hurt you through that existence, depending on how well or how little you take care of it. And so I think that's a great point.
And, you know, you have to ask, too, what are you living for? I mean, that's the big question. And if somebody is choosing to live for, you know, the skyrise office in Manhattan, that's their choice and it has no impact on you. But what are you choosing to live for, you know, and what is the most important to you and how are you going to get there? So it's very personalized. It is very much, I guess, kind of like religious beliefs. You know, everyone has a different take on it, but as a whole, maybe we're all heading in a similar direction. But with work and with our personal time and how we choose to live and our hobbies and so forth, it's kind of like, what are you living for, you know, and who are you living for? So many people are still living out dreams of their parents or their grandparents or, you know, some idea that they think they have for somebody else. So it's that all comes to play when you start doing a little digging inside, you know?
Yeah, when we start to get present with ourselves, I think what just occurred to me is a great quote I heard years ago, which is, there's no power in comparison. And we spend so much of our lives comparing ourselves on every skill in the office, personally. Is our relationship as good as their relationship? Is our mother or friend as good as their friend or job? And it's just, it's a life suck. It's like a black hole because we get so consumed by wanting to be the best. And it's no matter how many years humans have existed, it's the whole keeping up with the Joneses. Probably cavemen used to say, oh, that person has a better cave than I do. You know, it's a part of the human experience. So I think that's
so true. And I'm a very competitive person. I mean, I'll admit, you know, anything I'm doing, I it's not that I want to win and defeat someone. It's just I really want to be my best, you know. And I had to just kind of stop looking at what everybody else is doing and just check in today. You know, what have I done today to move towards my dream? It may be completely different. And the other thing, when you're comparing, you're not creating or allowing any space to do something unique and totally you and express yourself and maybe an unusual way that might change the whole world. You know, if you're always trying to do it like someone else is doing it, then you're really just repeating patterns that have already been done. And how boring is that, you know? So if you free yourself from it, then now you have the opportunity to create your life and create your dreams, whatever they are. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I know one of the things you and I talked about, so let's say that somebody starts with step one, you know, looking at the physical side of it. What are they putting into their body? Is it fueling them? Is it helping them to be their highest and best self? Is the next step then, once they've gotten that part on track, to look back at their life at the post-traumatic emotional disorders that they may have faced, or a little bit, is there something you could tell us about that?
Well, sure. You know, the book is kind of laid out. I mean, I guess we can talk about it in steps, which is fine. But after we identify the fear and get into our body and get present where we feel safe, then I kind of laid it out in a way of, here's some of the main ways that we suffer. You know, we all experience it differently. Someone suffers by being bullied. Another person suffers by being left and abandoned. It happens a million different ways, but fundamentally we suffer similarly. And there's, you know, the main expression of those feelings. So the book is kind of laid out in a way of, you know, here's some symptoms. Here's some ways that you may be experiencing blockages or latent suffering, or stuffed emotions, that kind of thing. And helping a person really identify out of one of these six or seven issues where they are. Mm. And then once they start to identify where they are and accept that space, then they have something to work with. And of course, it's always fluctuating. We experience all ways of suffering. But at one general point, there's typically, you know, a deeper issue going on, whether it's self-doubt or shame or guilt or this really deep-seated fear of being alive, you know, or being unlovable. And we know these in various degrees, but when we're stuck, and in particular when we're having trouble moving forward, following our hearts, going after an achievement or goal, something personal, or staying in relationships that are healthy, it's usually because there's, you know, one of these more, I don't want to say a bigger issue, but you know, this the root issue, and that's what we have to find out. So then from that point forward, there's a lot of tips and tools, emotional workouts. I talk about emotional workouts a lot. I love the idea. I love the phrase, and I love the emotional workouts that are included, but it's really like taking care of your emotional self like you would your physical self, and giving a little time each day to that, or each week. So there's different ones suggested for these main ways that we suffer, and they really do help move energy and move emotion, and you know, get you on a better path. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, there's no pill to take. There's no 7-day diet plan to get on. It's really just being courageous to show up and allow the change to happen, just like we allow time to pass. You know, we don't give a lot of thought to that. But if we can get into that kind of zen space of allowing things to change, allowing things to progress, then we start to notice slowly it happens.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's the problem, I think, in today's society, that whether you're a millennial, baby boomer, it doesn't matter. We all have gotten into this mindset of faster is better and immediate gratification, which rules and runs our lives. And I see it happen in the job hunting world all the time, where somebody has one bad day at work, and then next thing you know, they're walking out on a job, or they're leaving for a worse job. And I think that we let our emotions, when they're not balanced, run our lives, sometimes in a very detrimental way, if we don't actually pause and think through our actions and be mindful of what we're about to do, rather than just react to a circumstance that makes us unhappy in the moment.
Yes, exactly. And it's hard to get on top of that. You know, we taught a lot how to control emotions or hide your emotions, especially in the workplace and this kind of thing. But if you don't deal with the emotions in an appropriate way on your personal time, then you're more likely to have a fit, you know, and the fit can leave you turning in your, you know, resignation letter too early, or just walking out. And now we've got even more post-traumatic emotional disorder compounding the issue that's underlying it. So it really is a day-to-day process. It should be.
Yeah, and it's something that, unless you're constantly working on peeling back, I mean, you know, the post-traumatic emotional disorders that we have, it's like, I would imagine, it's like the layers of an onion, is that there's always more to kind of discover and to get to the bottom of who you really are after you remove the traumas and the hurts, and they just show up. I think that people trigger us, too, and so often it's either our closest people, like our loved ones, our significant others, our family members, or our closest friends who get the brunt of it, or people in the office, because if you're not properly harnessing your internal emotions and processing them in a meaningful way, then it just explodes, like you said, unexpectedly,
right.
And the next thing you know, you're fired or being, you know, asked to resign or whatever that might look like. So how?
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, like with emotions such as anger or resentment, I mean, these are natural emotions. It's normal, it's natural, it's healthy to, one, identify what those emotions are, and two, to express them. It's when we don't express them that they turn into rage and knee-jerk reactions. And, you know, then we're just reacting all the time instead of responding from an emotionally mature place. So it's important to, you know, be okay with the authentic emotions that you have.
Yeah, and embrace them rather than try and sweep them under the rug or numb them, as so many of us have done with, you know, different pills, drugs, or gambling. I mean, there's so many ways shopping. That was my favorite, is there was once a candidate who had on her resume that, what was it? There's like a term for shopping was listed as one of her hobbies. And it just cracked me up.
Yeah.
I'm like, you might want to take that off your resume. I don't think it's necessarily going to land you that particular job that you want. But what would you do? Speaking of jobs, passion. So you've identified some of the past emotional disorders and distresses that you've had. You've now gone through, you've done some of the emotional workouts, which I love that term. I think that's brilliant. Then what's the next step? How can you start to ignite your passion once you've made the space that we talked about to bring something else new forward?
Well, it's really about action taking. I'm a big action-oriented person. Yes, downtime is necessary, you know, rest, mindfulness, meditation, quiet time, alone time, all are wonderful things. And we also need to get a little bit more spunky, because this day and age, we kind of have this idea that the universe will work it out, or I'll just pray for a sign, or, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll be, and all these really cool sounding phrases. But the reality is, you got to get off your rear and do the work, you know, and start taking steps. And so that's often the action issue is usually latent. And if it burns out, it's because of relationship issues that have gone unattended to, like familial relationship issues, or creative, the creative energy that we've just let go of. You know, people think creativity is just about art or singing or painting or what have you. Creativity can be working with numbers. It can be cooking. It can be, you know, talking to a friend or doing a million things, but allowing yourself to play and get creative. That is one thing that will spark interest in life again and in career and in motivation. But we have to get moving. And, you know, even in meditation, I'm always on my class, you know, sit up, get engaged, and get involved. This isn't a time to rest. You know, your mind will get the rest. Our body, our spirits, we're doing something here, you know, and that's the way it should be in life, too. Not sitting back, waiting for something to change. Even in the book, I talk about peace. Peace is not passive. You know, we work for peace. We strive for peace. We create peace. We, you know, look for it in places and help enhance it for others. Peace is very active, as is most anything that's worth, you know, attending our energy and time to. So I think, you know, getting into creative space, allowing yourself to play and to really just self-motivate however you have to for the first, you know, week or two to get engaged again in your life and start taking action, it's really critical.
Yeah, one of my favorite things when I do talks is I talk about action times intention equals your success, because you can have the best intentions. So many people have, I love The Secret, I love Michael Beckwith, he's one of my favorite mentors and teachers. But, you know, if you sit on the couch all day visualizing your dream job or visualizing $1 million, but you don't get off the couch, you're never going to get anywhere, and vice versa. I feel like so many of us, you know, go out and we do. There are also the doers who never actually have an intention behind what they're doing, and they don't have a direction that they're focusing or harnessing their energy. And so you're just kind of like a horse in a carriage going all over the place, but nobody's holding on to the reins. So I think it's, you have to either have the horse, which is the action, or you have to hold on to the reins, which is the intention. And it's only when you combine the two that you can actually direct the carriage the way you want it to go.
Yes, I agree. And sometimes, though, we just need to get up and do something. You know, sometimes we just need to do something. And people get lost and stuck and they get bored. And I'm always amazed at people who get bored. It's like there's so much to do in this world. And our life is so short, relatively speaking. You know, if you're feeling uninspired, just get up and do something. Just, you know, go to the park, help a friend, color in a book, do something. Because in that space, when we allow our minds and our bodies to play and our emotions to be free, that's when new ideas come. You know, that's when we get recharged. That's when that spark gets ignited, is connecting back into our soul. And that can happen so many ways. Like I mentioned, those emotional workouts. So, you know, action, I think, is key. Intention is wonderful, yes, especially when you're going towards a specific goal. But for a person that's just trying to, you know, get moving, it's kind of like you got to just get moving. You know, take a walk, it'll help. It does help.
Yeah, one of my teachers at some point, one of my spiritual teachers, had said when you're working on creating a new habit of just getting outside of yourself, or it's something you've really been struggling with, whether it's working out or applying for jobs or working on generating creativity, like you said, she said that you need to do something 3 days in a row to start, and then you need to keep it going for 40 days in a row. So once you get past that third day of doing a habit, 3 days or more, that's the first stumbling block. And then the next one is to do something for 40 days straight. And once you start to do it, I mean, there are so many habits that I would have never thought I would have the time to do that are for my spiritual development and growth and actions that I take, that it seems insurmountable at the time, but you just start one day at a time and one day at a time. And the next thing you know, you've done it 3 days or 40 days or you know, meditation for me. It's been, 4 years now, so however many 1,200 days since then, or 1,300 days. And mm-hmm. it just becomes a practice. And I think all these practices lead to you being more effective. And just like you said, take action. Even when it feels uncomfortable, take action. It's a great sign that it's the perfect time to take action.
Right.
And one last thing I want to touch on that I know sparked my interest when you and I had initially connected and spoke is you were talking about igniting your passion through your sacral chakra. And I mentioned I love chakra stuff. I love looking into the energies and using crystals for meditation. Do you have any recommendations or any exercises that you could recommend to the listeners out there about how they could connect and be more present to their sacral chakra, which, as you and I know, is connected to abundance, to creativity, to many great things that we all want in our life? Any advice on that?
Well, you know, the second chakra is there beneath the belly button, below, above the pelvis area, in that lower stomach region. And so, again, physically, making sure that everything's working well, going to the restroom easily, regularly, that there's no issues in that regard. That's the number one thing, to stay in the flow of ourselves. Again, when we don't feel good, it dampens everything in our life. So we want to make sure physically that we're in top condition with our digestive health and elimination and so forth. I love, you know, even if you're not a dancer, just the energy and the thought of dance. You know, there's something powerful about music. But really, invigorating the energy around the sacral chakra, your low back, your hips, your pelvis, any of that movement and dance and yoga and even, you know, walking and jogging can help a little bit. But allowing the play and the connection to soul. And for me, that very much comes through music or dancing. But for other people, it can come other ways. When we're, you know, touching that part of ourselves that really connects with our soul, whether it's singing or doing clay or writing or whatever it is, there's something different happens inside of ourselves. We get kind of, charged, and we feel like we're in the flow of our life, and we're not really concerned about time. We're not concerned about how many days we're doing anything. We're just in the zone. And I think everyone knows what it feels like to be in a zone with something. And so that's that energy that we're looking for, is how to create that zone. And it's different for everybody. You know, the color of that chakra energy is orange. So I always recommend for people, especially if they have trouble staying grounded and or with their creativity, doing some accenting around your home with orange color and really vibrant, you know, that kind of earthy orange or clay orange or even orange color is a great way to stimulate your senses and to remind you, if anything, that, you know, to add some color and some play in your life.
I think that's brilliant. There are so many wonderful things that we can do just to reconnect with ourselves. And I feel like, as, you know, somebody who's been on that path myself and hearing you share about what you went through in your path, I think it's so great if even one person out there is able to explore, you know, going there and taking care of their health. And then that leads to being free enough to look at some of their past emotional traumas and eventually igniting their passion, whether it's through dance or writing or whatever that might look like. I think that you've given people some wonderful tools, and obviously I recommend to everybody to go out and read the book. It offers way more than what we have time to cover on the show today. So for any of our listeners out there who want to find out more about you or about the show, what websites would you recommend that they go to?
Well, my website is leahguy.com. That's LEAHGUY.com. The book, The Fearless Path, is on Barnes & Noble and Amazon and Target, and it's released on Audible and digital copies in different places. So that's really accessible online. And, you know, we just got featured on Insight Timer, which is a wonderful meditation app, and my root chakra meditation is there for free. So that might be a good place to start if you're into meditation. I want to check that out, or the full CD is on my website. But I hope people who feel inspired by it will, you know, at least look into what the Fearless Path is about, because there's a lot to offer there, and it's really for anyone. It's not just for a certain kind of, you know, spirit-seeking soul. It's practical, it's accessible, and I think it will help shed some light on new areas of our being.
Yeah, Leah, you gave us some wonderful tips today. And for any of our listeners who may have tuned in late to the show, as a reminder, you can always find the whole show on the archive of the LA Talk Radio website for download shortly after the show is done. Or we encourage any of you out there to please subscribe to the show. You can subscribe to it for free on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job. Please don't hesitate to rate us, leave any comments for myself or any of our guests, Leah included. And you can also find us on Get Yourself the Job on Facebook. If you ever have subjects or authors or people that you would like us to have on the show or questions you would like us to answer, we welcome that, because without you, the show wouldn't be possible. And I just love sharing wonderful information like this with everybody, because Leah, you gave, I mean, thank you. You gave some wonderful, wonderful tips. And I think that a lot of people out there are going to have a lot of food for thought today, and I'm really grateful for the time that you spent with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
Yes, absolutely. And next week for Memorial Day, we're going to have Pete Zalvalas, who is the Senior Vice President of Challenger Gray & Christmas, a very famous outplacement company here in the Los Angeles area, on the show talking about some of the more traditional things, such as interviewing, resume writing, and that wonderful question that always gets people tripped up, tell me about yourself. So tune in next week. Have a wonderful week and a safe Memorial Day weekend. And thank you so much for joining us, Leah.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.